Good morning. It is time to get up with another Philly special. Why everything we assumed we knew about the Eagles' plans might suddenly be off the table. Plus, how low might they go? We'll tell you the absolute latest. Any of the Big Five quarterbacks could go off the board 1 week from tonight. And then, risk reward. We'll identify the biggest risks in the NFL draft and why your team needs to stay away. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now on a Thursday, 1 week and counting till round one of the NFL draft. And the crew is here that's going to bring it to you live on ESPN. We are ready to go. Kimberly Martin is breaking stories this morning, and Lewis Riddick, Mel Kiper, and Booger McFarland are ready to break down your draft needs right as we roll on. And it starts with Philly. We begin with the Eagles and their plans at quarterback. They trade Carson Wentz. The expectation, of course, Jalen Hurts becomes their starter. But yesterday, the coach, Nick Sirianni, and the general manager, Howie Roseman, had these things to say about the quarterback position ahead of the draft.
To name any starters at this particular time, we've been working with these guys for 2 days, right? We've been working with these guys for 2 days. My biggest thing is competition. Again, we've talked a little bit about my core values. It's my second core value. It's this team's second core value. Competition's a huge thing, and we're going to have competition at every position.
You know, like we talked about when we had our last media opportunity, we're going to evaluate every player, and nothing is off the table.
Nothing is off the table. So the Eagles aren't ruling out drafting a quarterback. Right now, these are the two quarterbacks on their roster. You see, they started 4 games each last year. The record, obviously, you add those together, it's 1-7 and a lot of trouble. But they were both in complicated circumstances. And so, Kimberly Martin, let me start with you. What the actual heck? You got the Eagles trading out of a spot where they could have taken a quarterback at number 6 if they wanted to. They trade away Carson Wentz, and now they're saying this. What does it mean?
Yep. Listen, you're going to hear Nick Sirianni talk about core values a lot. We may not know him as a head coach, but that's one of his big things, core values, and competition is key. It's not at all surprising that he didn't name Jalen Hurts the outright starter. I think if you're coming in as a new head coach, a young head coach, you're trying to rebuild a culture. So he wants guys to buy into competition, guys who want to win, who are really putting in the work and not going through the motions. So that is what Jalen Hurts, if he gives him the job outright in April, then, you know, how do you maintain the competition thing, right? But I think it's all coach speak in the end because, yes, look at the actions. All indications are that Jalen Hurts, provided they don't take a quarterback, which I don't think they will in the first round, but all indications point to Jalen Hurts being QB1 when the season starts.
All right, we'll see if they're lined up behind him. Kimberly, stay tight. I want to bring the rest of the crew in here this morning and just try and get the latest perspective on this. And Lewis Riddick, I'll start with you. Again, they were sitting at 6. If they wanted to take a quarterback, they could have. So you listen to, in one ear, you hear what they say. With your eyes, you see what they do. What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, look, I think this is typical Philadelphia right now. It really doesn't seem as though they're quite sure which direction they're going to go, or they're not giving us really the true direction that they're going to go or what they're really thinking as far as the draft is concerned. Look, what Nick Sirianni is saying is something that every coach says. I mean, every coach puts out there that they want to have great competition. They want to make sure that everybody earns their spot. Every position is up for grabs. So, I mean, it's him saying that really goes in one ear and out the other for me. As far as their draft strategy is concerned, your guess is as good as mine. If everything is on the table, everything, meaning quarterback is still on the table, then you never would have moved out of there. You never would have moved out of 6 to move down to 12 because odds are you're not going to get a guy who's a top flight guy unless somehow you're going to shock the world and you're going to draft somebody like Kyle Trask or Davis Mills at number 12, or you think that someone like Mac Jones and or Justin Fields or Trey Lance is going to fall to you, which is not going to happen more than likely. So I don't really know, you know, what their strategy is so far. But we're going to find out. We're going to find out a week from today, and we're going to see if they really have, you know, a concrete plan as to how to get this team, you know, out of the cellar of the NFC East and get it back in contention again.
Now, Mel, I think we all of us agree with what Lewis just said, that one of the Big Five quarterbacks is not still going to be available at 12. But if one of them should fall there, and stranger things have certainly happened, do you think the Eagles will take him?
I don't know, Greeny. That's a big question. I think what you could do at this time of the year is you go to the beach in the Bahamas and you relax and you tune everything out because you hear so much garbage this time of year. It's ridiculous. But I think for Philadelphia, they went from 6 to 12. They can still get a receiver, maybe Devontae Smith, maybe Jalen Waddle, maybe a linebacker like Micah Parsons or a cornerback like J.C. Horn. You know, Jalen Hurts, wasn't that long ago that I missed something when they said that Jalen Hurts were going to build around? Wasn't that coming out of Philadelphia that this was our guy and then all of a sudden now it's going to be competition? Well, I can tell you, Joe Flacco's there to win a job. He's not there to be a nice guy and help. He's there to try to win a job. But let's face it, Jalen Hurts is the quarterback right now, and they're going to be at 12, and they're not going to see a quarterback there at 12 more than likely. And they're going to have a really good player fall in their lap, which makes that trade at the end of the day, after you get all the yakking out of the way, at 12, they're going to be probably feel pretty good about that trade and who they were able to acquire.
So it only took us 5 minutes to get Mel into that state of mind. I consider myself a success today.
This is the Mel I love. My man is getting fired up. Like, get all that yakking out of the way. I love it.
It's my job. He's got the pumpkin pie working already. It's coursing through the veins. All right, so Booger, let me come to you because I'm just trying to connect all the dots here, right? We trade away Carson Wentz because we want to build around this quarterback. We fired a coach because he didn't seem to get along with the previous quarterback. Now we bring in a new coach whose core value is we don't give the job to anybody. We bring in Joe Flacco, who, despite what he may think, clearly feels at this stage like a backup quarterback, and we're building around Jalen Hurts, but we won't say it. Make sense of what's happening for me in Philadelphia.
Well, Greeny, it's the part of the offseason and the part of the pre-draft process where I think GMs have to get up there and they have to say nothing and lie, and we have to dissect every piece of it. Here's what I'll say. I think if you look at why he said it, think about Joe Flacco. You got a veteran quarterback coming in who's talking about coming in and playing his best and winning the job. So you don't want to crush his hopes. So you talk about competition. Number two, the owner came out and said, and this is all I need to know because he's the guy that owns the team. He came out and said, I've instructed the front office to build around Jalen Hurts. So regardless of what Nick Sirianni says, the owner has spoken. So this is much to do about nothing. And as far as Howie Roseman is concerned, when he said everything is on the table, I'm going to translate for him. Hopefully everything means linebacker because their linebackers have been terrible. So hopefully in his language, everything means linebacker because at linebacker, wide receiver, corner, as Mel spoke about, there's a lot of room for improvement. And them moving down and trading down to the pick that they're at, Greeny, I do not think that they're going to be able to get a quarterback. So it's that part of the offseason, man, where when they say something, they try to say nothing, and we got to dissect it. But when the owner speaks and the owner says do this, this is what you do. Just go back and look at what the Washington football team did when they drafted Dwayne Haskins. We knew the owner wanted him, and who did they get?
Yes. Look how well that worked out for them. So, Lewis, let me circle back to you then to finish the conversation. If Booger is saying they need a linebacker, if Micah Parsons, as Mel said, falls to them, is that the perfect pick? Is Micah Parsons from Penn State at 12 to the Eagles the perfect pick for them if it plays out that way?
Well, from a need perspective, it is. But I don't think the Philadelphia Eagles haven't drafted a linebacker in the first round in, what, over 30 years? Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey Lurie, from a team-building perspective, I can tell you this. From my time being there and then from the time since I've left there, this is not a team that invests a lot of money in linebackers, whether it be during the draft or free agency. They just don't. This is not a critical position for them. It is not a top five position for them. Heck, I don't even believe it's a top 10 position for them. This is an offensive-driven football team, a team that believes you have to outscore the opponent and then hold on, play ball control late in football games in order to secure the win. And I don't think that they value linebacker, or rather look at linebacker as being one of those positions that really puts you in a position to play out that kind of philosophy. So, I mean, when you look at their depth chart, yeah, he would make sense. When you look at their philosophy and look at their history, no, it doesn't make sense at all.
Well, everything is on the table in Philadelphia, which means we are 1 week away from the draft. Sit tight, guys. We have so much to do, just getting started. But speaking of Philadelphia, all the Sixers were involved in the game of the night last night. Joel Embiid and his team taking on the Suns, and it's a good game. Second quarter, Sixers up three, and look at Embiid working on his former teammate, Dario Saric. Look at the bully ball. Embiid a double-double in the first half, 18 and 10. Now, fourth quarter, here's where it gets decided. Good game. Minute to play. Sixers are down six and more from Joel. Well, look at the handles. Look at the spinorama. He had 38 points, 17 rebounds. Now, Suns on the other end. We're under 20 seconds to play. Shot clock winding down. Devin Booker looking for space. Devin Booker gets it to go. He had 19. Suns up six. 5 seconds to play. Sixers are down five. Furkan Korkmaz with the inbound. trying to find some room. He's got the three. Sixers are within two. They need to foul. Suns got to get it in. Suns got to get it in. Suns got to get it in. Oh, they do. Chris Paul, he scored 28 points on the night. Two free throws would ice it. He would make the first. Here comes the second. It's no good. Sixers, a chance. Embiid. Oh, look how close that was to going in. Take another look. Embiid with the essentially full court heave. That ball is in. All of it is beneath the rim, and it doesn't go. And just like that, the Suns hang on to win a thriller 116-113 last night. And with that loss, Philly's cushion for the top spot in the East narrows to just a half a game, with Brooklyn sitting at second and Milwaukee 3.5 games back. Brooklyn has the best chance in the East to make the finals and the second best in the NBA behind the Jazz, according to our analytics. All right, we are just getting rolling. Coming up, how low might they go? We'll tell you the absolute latest any of the Big Five quarterbacks might go off the board a week from tonight. Plus, the big weigh-in for Devontae Smith. How much of a concern is his size? Let's get up, and we're just getting started on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We are back on Get Up, and let's play a little game of either or with the quarterbacks 1 week till the draft. Lewis, you got the choice between Mac Jones or Trey Lance. Who are you taking?
Yes, this is a tough one, but I'm going to give it to Trey Lance by a hair. Why? Because I'm betting on the upside. I know there are some people who believe that the floor is a little bit lower for him, given the fact that he has a small sample size. Well, so does Mac Jones. But Trey Lance right now is just knocking the pre-draft process out of the park from a makeup and character and mental and football intellect standpoint to go along with tremendous physical skills. I think if you hit on him, you get him in the right place, you get let him season for a year and then unleash him in 2022, you've got yourself a superstar.
Next up, Booger, Justin Fields or Trey Lance? Who are you taking?
Greeny, I think it could be either. It really depends on the situation that these guys are in. We talk about going to a quarterback-friendly offense in San Francisco. If both of those guys go there, they could flourish because I think from a skill set standpoint, they both have a strong arm. They both have the ability to run and make those second reaction type plays. It's all going to depend on which situation they're in, but I do think in the right one, they both need to set a minute.
And then Mel, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, who are you taking?
I'm taking Justin Fields. People forget how great. I don't know. How can you not remember 2019? It wasn't like we're talking about 1981 here. He was great in 2019. Memories are being lost here over how great this kid was. Lighting it up. Then he outplays Trevor Lawrence this year. Plays through an injury. I'm going Justin Fields. I want to go to war with Justin Fields.
All right. And look, I mean, the bottom line of it is the odds on this just keep changing. Will Vegas please make up their mind? Caesars William Hill now has Mac Jones, once again the favorite to be the third overall pick in this draft. Over the course of the last week, it went to Justin Fields, and then it went to Trey Lance, and now it has gone back to Mac Jones. Sometimes it seems they just follow Shefty's Twitter feed and they make up their minds from there. So let's do an exercise here. Mel, again, you are synonymous with the draft. And as we consider the prospect of one of these quarterbacks falling, and again, I'll put that in air quotes because none of them are falling all that far. Give me the absolute latest you could see the fifth of them coming off the board. At what number would be the latest you could anticipate that possibly happening?
A couple things. I think Mac Jones goes 3 to the 49ers, which means that it's Trey Lance. Does he go to Atlanta or does Kyle Pitts go to Atlanta? Then Justin Fields and Trey Lance get into that Carolina at 8. Some people think Carolina could. I don't think so. Denver at 9 certainly could. Then you get into that situation. If those quarterbacks, one of those two, drops into the teens, guys, then there's a couple teams lurking. They're sitting there and within striking distance would be Chicago, Washington at 19, Chicago at 20. And New England's sitting there at 15. They could jump ahead of New England. If New England's not aggressive and think we can stand pat and have a quarterback fall in their lap, I don't think so. So I would say somewhere ahead of New England, if one of those quarterbacks gets into that 10 range, I could see a Washington, Chicago jumping up and getting one.
It's such a fascinating scenario, and I'll just remind everyone watching that the key to this really might be what Atlanta does at four, because if they take a quarterback or someone moves up to take a quarterback at four, now there's only one instead of two of them falling in Mel's scenario. So same question to you, Boog. What do you think realistically is the latest in this draft we will be calling one of those five guys' name?
Well, Green, I think all five are going in the top 10. And I think when you're looking for a team, I think New England will probably be the latest point. I think at some point, New England is going to look and say, okay, if there's a quarterback sitting there at 7 or 8 or somewhere, maybe we move up, make that phone call. Maybe they call Carolina and say, okay, you have Sam Darnold. You have your quarterback of the future. Let us come up and get ours. I think there's a premium on these quarterbacks. I think right now, based on how many you have in this class, based on a lack of quarterbacks as far as what we know next year, I think if you're New England and you're looking at your long-term success, you sign Cam Newton to a one-year deal. I don't think, at least, that he's the answer in New England. So if you're Josh McDaniels and you're Bill Belichick, you got to figure out a way that if one of those guys start to fall 7 or 8, you go up and you get the quarterback. I think New England, I don't know what pick, because I think they'll have to trade up, but I think New England is as far as the fifth quarterback falls in this scenario.
And with a trade-up. So, again, New England sits 15, but you're not saying you think he'll fall there. Our producers are going to yell at me, but, Lewis, I'm kind of changing the question on the fly because this just jumps into my head. How quickly could it all go? Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, if the fourth pick in this draft, whether it's Atlanta or someone else who makes it, if we do have the unprecedented scenario of 1, 2, 3, and 4, forget about how far they could fall. How quickly could they all go? How quickly could we see all five of these guys go off the board?
Well, I think then, you know, if it becomes a situation where now it's becoming scarce and now you have 1, 2, 3, 4 and like Trey Lance is not there anymore or Justin Fields isn't there anymore and you really just have one guy left, then I think you can wind up have a situation where teams like New England, teams like Washington, teams like Chicago, I don't know if they're one, they're willing to give up that kind of draft capital in order to move up. But I think then all of a sudden you have those teams, you know, in a flurry, rather in a tizzy, trying to get up into the top 10 and see if they can get whoever the last quarterback is that is left. And I think then you have a lot of action on the phones. We may not see it, but I think you're going to have a lot of action. Number four, you know, the fourth pick, obviously, everyone knows is where it all starts. If Atlanta doesn't take a quarterback, then I think right away teams are going to get on the phone. Teams are going to say, what is the point that we have to get to? I think New England gets on the horn. I think for sure, if Mac Jones goes for three at three like everyone expects, I think, personally, the guy who people will start moving up for and trying to get, a team like New England in particular, my opinion, is going to be Trey Lance. I think that's the guy that people are going to target. I think that's the guy that a team like New England will target. And it is going to get real interesting because then the eighth spot at Carolina, it does become a point where they're probably going to try and get to because no one knows what Denver's going to do at 9. It's just going to be fun. As soon as Atlanta picks, we'll know what's happening behind the scenes, no doubt about it.
Assuming Atlanta does pick. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, I think Detroit at 7, guys. If one of those quarterbacks is there at 7, right ahead of Carolina at 8, not only Carolina will take a quarterback, but like I say, some do, then that's 7 spot. If I'm the Lions and I'm getting a nice offer to get out of there and all the needs the Detroit Lions have in this rebuild, I'm getting out of 7, letting somebody jump in there to get that quarterback.
That is the point I was trying to get to. We could see 5 quarterbacks go off the board in the first 7 picks of this draft. That is the spot that I was thinking about because that's the first place you go trading up to if Carolina falls from there. So I think 9 is the absolute floor. We will see. Guys, sit tight. So much more of this. I've got my own mock a little bit later. Mel, you're not the only one who can do those. We'll get to that. But right now, let's run the bases through Major League Baseball action last night. And nothing is going right for the Yankees. They lose to the Braves 4-1 last night. The Yanks are 6-11 on the season. It's their worst start in 30 years. Their 58 runs are the fewest in the American League. So just a terrible start for the heavily favored Bronx Bombers. Meanwhile, despite getting home runs from both Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, the Angels lost to Texas last night 7-4. The Rangers' Adolis Garcia hit a go-ahead 3-run homer in the 8th to give Texas the lead. And then we had a dramatic finish in Oakland. The Twins' Byron Buxton hit a 2-run shot in the top of the 10th take a 12-10 lead, but the A's came back, fueled by a couple of errors. The second one, a throwing error by Luis Arraez, allowed the tying and winning runs to score, so the A's win their 11th straight by a score of 13-12. All right, what a lineup we have coming up for you this weekend. Saturday afternoon, we got Sixers-Bucks, and Saturday night, we've got UFC 261 on pay-per-view, three titles on the line, ESPN and ESPN+. Sunday afternoon, the Nets host the Suns, and our Sunday night baseball matchup, the finale between the rival Padres and Dodgers. So an unbelievable weekend. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, Booger, you got to see this. All right, this is a 4x200 relay in Utah. And you're going to watch a dog, okay? So you got a great sprinter. But take a look at the dog. And the dog is coming strong on the inside. Booger, take a look. The dog is going to win the race. What is your reaction?
Well, I mean, Greeny, the dog's got four legs. Hopefully the dog can run faster than the human. I mean, this is not something that we should be astonished about. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, Greeny. Now, it would be something if the human or if the lady beat the dog. But, I mean, he's got four legs. Come on, buddy.
The woman's name is Gracie Laney. The dog's name is Holly. Gracie commented afterwards, "I can't believe I got beat by a dog." All right, as we continue, the draft is loaded with star power at receiver, but I will tell you why the risk may not be worth the reward. That is on the way, and so is this. I promise you, we are going to make Mel mad. And there's nothing more fun. No, don't smile. We want you frowning and angry, and we will do that in a moment.
Right,
this is Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up, and let's just play a game called What Should They Do? A week from the draft, Lewis, the 49ers sit at 3. What should they do?
Look, I'm fine if they go with Trey Lance or Mac Jones here. I think really what it is, it's a matter of expectation as far as how quickly do you want your young quarterback to play. If you want him to play right away, I think it's no secret that Mac Jones, given what he was exposed to in Alabama, will be ready to play much sooner. And if you really are going to hold on to Jimmy Garoppolo and you want to give the young quarterback time, then take Trey Lance. I think his upside is unlimited in this situation. So I think they would be fine going with either one of these two young men.
Like it. Meanwhile, in a lot of ways, this is the pivotal pick. Booger, what should the Falcons do?
Greeny, take a quarterback. I would say take Kyle Pitts and take the skill position player if this team holistically was ready to win, but they're not. Their defense is not very good, and so what good is it going to do for you to draft a skill position player and have a high-profile offense like we saw the Cowboys have, and your defense stink? You're still not going to win any games. So if you're Atlanta and your defense is not ready, take the quarterback and build around Trey Lance or whoever you take.
That would create an incredibly interesting scenario. Meanwhile, Mel, the Bengals are at 5. What should they do?
Most fascinating team, one of the most fascinating in the top 10 is the Bengals because of the options, Greeny. It could be Jamar Chase, Burrow's target at LSU, maybe Kyle Pitts, but I'm taking Penei Sewell to protect Joe Burrow, the elite left tackle who would kick inside to guard as a rookie, but ultimately be a great bookend. Then I'm going De'Ami Brown, wide receiver, North Carolina in the second. So take advantage of the depth at wide receiver, get run 1 in round 2.
And guess what, Mel? You are 100% right. We did this essay yesterday. I was delighted at the reaction this got on social media because if you define hit rate as the percentage of time a first-round pick signs a second contract with his team, offensive linemen are a great bet, the best in the sport. Wide receivers are a terrible bet, the worst in the sport. One out of every four sign a second contract with the team. Hence, three out of every four do not. And again, I did this essay on the air yesterday expecting it to get very little attention because it's not a very sexy topic. And it went crazy on social because people are that kind of into this. I'm trying to read your face, Booger. If you're taking the option, if I give you the option, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, the offensive lineman who feels like a lock. On the other side, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, the star receivers. Which way do you go?
Greeny, I'm going to go with the offensive lineman. Think about this, Greeny. If I gave you $1 million, are you going to buy a house first or a car? Now, I know you're kind of flashy, so maybe you go get a car, but I'm going to get a house. I'm going to get a foundation. I'm going to get something that's stable, Greeny. So if you're one of these teams and you have the franchise quarterback, get the left tackle. The lasting image in my mind is watching Joe Burrow with his knee going the other way. So whichever one of these guys that you have rated higher, whether it's Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater, take them. Put them at left tackle, guard. I don't care where you put them. Put them on the offensive line, and you protect your franchise quarterback. You build a foundation, and you take advantage of a draft that is so deep at wide receiver, you come back and get another one later.
Yeah, and the depth, you know, year in and year out, that might vary, but the numbers remain constant. Lewis, as one who has been in these rooms having these conversations, what is your perspective on this? The disparity there is enormous between the general success rate of the lineman versus the general success rate of the wide receiver in round one.
Yeah, look, Brady, I think if you did the exercise, which we have done in front offices before, and you were really trying to, and you prioritized the positions 1 through 22 offensively and defensively, I think the vast majority of people would put offensive tackle, whether it be left or right, depending upon if you have a right-handed or left-handed quarterback, they put offensive tackle above wide receiver when you're ranking them 1 through 22. So I think if you have guys who are graded very, very similarly, you would obviously default to the offensive lineman, even if you were just doing an objective exercise of how to build a football team. I think subjectively and common sense-wise, when we understand that you should probably build your football team inside out and build it front to back. I say it all the time. It's funny because even people around here in my house, they laugh at me for constantly saying that, yeah, Dad, we know, inside out, front to back. That's how you build football teams. I think it just makes sense. It makes sense that that's where you have to go because quarterbacks, we saw it in the Super Bowl. If you need any more evidence, just look at the Super Bowl from just this past year and you ask Patrick Mahomes this. Hey, look, if you had your choice, would you want a left tackle who's going to keep you from having to run around like you were down there in Tampa Bay? Or would you want another one of these flashy wide receivers? He would tell you, please, please protect me. Please don't have me have to play the football game like that. So really, it's a no-brainer regardless of the statistics. That's how you have to take care of it. You have to get big men. There aren't a whole lot of them like Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater walking around on earth anyway. Make sure you get one of those guys in your locker room.
It's the perfect example. In the Super Bowl, Tom Brady was pressured 4 times. Patrick Mahomes, a record 29 times. He had no fighting chance in that game. Mel, I'm sure a lot of people then would like to hear you answer this. From a depth perspective, offensive line versus wide receiver, taking your preference for the position out of the equation, where do we see them? How deep are those positions in this draft, which begins a week from tonight?
It's tricky, Greeny, because at offensive tackle, you got some left tackle prospects. You have some right tackle prospects. Some guys are going to kick inside to guard. So that left tackle position, even late first round, who's the right guy that's going to be there? Maybe nobody. And in the second round, same thing. Is the right guy going to drop to you? So you got to be really careful if you want a specific left tackle, right tackle, guard. Wide receiver, you got a ton of slots, a ton of outside guys, and a ton of guys who played slot and outside. So wide receiver is the best bet to find a player that's really good, whether it's a second, third, fourth, fifth round. You're going to find receivers in this draft, very plentiful, both slot and wide.
Guys who are running in the 4.3s are everywhere you look in this draft. So, yes, that is much easier to find. Okay, everyone, you're going to enjoy this. Booger and Lewis, just put your feet up. You're going to have fun with this because it is time for something that we call Make Mel Mad. Because we discovered on this program a few months ago, there's nothing more fun than when Mel is mad. And so I'm going to try and do that by just, I always feel like this is cheating. It's too easy. But as I have done all my research for this draft next week, Mel, I have come to the following conclusion. There are not one, not two, but three running backs that should go in round one next Thursday night in this draft, in this order, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and then Javonte Williams from North Carolina. Mel, what do you think?
I was smiling, Greeny, because I knew you were going to tick me off, and I love to get fired up about something. And you know, so I knew you were going to bring something crazy to the table here. Running backs in the first round, I don't get it. History tells us you can find them from the second round on. History tells us why take one in the first round. You don't need to. Look at the teams that win big in the NFL. Was it a first round running back that they drafted, that keyed that Super Bowl win or that run through the playoffs? No. And I think when you look at Najee Harris and Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams, are they as good as J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor, and DeAndre Swift last year? I can say no, they're not. And all those guys went in the second round. They had really good rookie years, but they were not first-round pick. Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 32 to Kansas City was the only first-round pick. No. Mistake. Three in a row there, Greeny, if you take a running back in round one. But early second round, Jacksonville, the Jets, Atlanta, Miami, in the second, that sweet spot for running backs, round two, that's where you start pulling a trigger on a running back.
Boy, am I hoping this happens next Thursday night, guys, as I bring Lewis and Booger back into the conversation here. I just hope it happens just to see Mel's reaction. But let me make my case, and I'm going to get into this a little more on radio. But do I have Lewis still? I'd like to bring Lewis in on this thought.
I'm here.
Here's my belief, and I hate saying this because it's so totally unfair to them. But I believe you take the running back in the first round because you get the fifth year. And then you don't ever, under any circumstances, consider giving the running back a second contract. The lot in life of a running back is to get drafted, to get used up, and then to be moved on from. But if you look at early in their careers, the impacts that Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, guys like that can have immediately on teams, if they're that kind of special, I do think it is worth the first-round pick. The mistake people make is when they sign them to the second contract. That's where it almost always runs into a brick wall. Lewis, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think when you're talking about unique players, I think that's the key. Is the guy unique? Is the guy have some kind of ability that really you feel as though when you look at the history of running backs, he brings something to the table that other running backs just simply have not? And look, when Ezekiel Elliott came out, there were many who believed his ability to affect all three downs, both run and pass, was something that was unique. So I understood why Dallas took him. But I don't think the running backs in this class really affect the game on all three downs to that degree. So I'm with Mel in this case. I think it's case by case. I don't think overall you can say that no running back deserves to go in the first round. I think it is an individualized type of thing. I think they can have an immediate impact. I do agree you make mistakes when you sign them to second contracts, especially if they have a lot of tread on their tires. It's just a case by case situation.
What do you think, Bug?
Yeah, when you look at a guy who's a pure running back, but what I would tell Mel is don't think about him as a running back. Think about whoever it is as a weapon, somebody that's going to carry the football and also catch 80 or 90 balls. You talk about Kyle Pitts, that he's one of one. And I'm not saying that there's one in this draft, but if there's a running back that comes along that is a weapon, a guy that is a three-down player like Lewis is talking about, a guy that can catch you 70 or 80, 90 balls but can also run between the tackles, Mel, you're going to have to come off of this running back in the first round thing, guy. You're going to have to open your mind up. They're not running backs. They're football players. So don't put people in positions, Mel. Come on.
Come on, Mel.
That's fine. Alvin Kamara was the third-round draft choice. To me, you look at a Demetric Felton, UCLA, and Michael Carter, North Carolina. Boog, you can find those. I'm with you. And one thing Lewis said about they deserve. Yeah, there are guys that deserve to be first-rounders. I'm not arguing that point. I just wouldn't take them. I said if the grade early on was in line and I had that head coach saying, I got to have them, maybe you say, okay, if the grade is way up there, fine. But I'm not taking a running back. You don't need to. And I like these guys. I think they deserve to go. I'm just not taking them on my football team.
All right, we'll leave that there. I think we have successfully made Mel at least a little bit mad today, and we'll see if we can't keep doing that as our day continues. Meanwhile, much more conversation 1 week from the draft as we go. The big weigh-in for Devontae Smith. How big a deal is how little he is? We will get to that as we continue. And, hey, Booger, Hembo's coming for you. We have Sneaky Hembo on the way. Don't miss it. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up. And according to a report by SI.com, Alabama receiver Devontae Smith, who won the Heisman, was weighed and measured at a recent medical check in Indianapolis. He clocked in at 6 feet and 166 pounds. At Alabama, he was listed at 6'1 and 175. And so as I bring everybody in, and Kimberly Martin is with us today as well. I'm sorry, Cindy, tell me that again. They are there. We will get a shot up in a moment. But Kimberly Martin, I will ask you this. You have sat down with Devontae Smith of late. How much of a concern do you think it is for NFL teams that he only weighs 166 pounds?
Greeny, I don't think it should be, but I'm sure there's some teams that have their preferences. Look, I've covered a lot of bad teams and bad players and a lot of guys who look the part, yet they didn't put in the effort and they didn't love the game. So, and guess what? Those guys aren't in the league anymore. You can't say anything bad about Devontae Smith besides the fact that he might not be 6'4", you know, 220-something pounds. The kid's a baller.
Of that, there is no question. But if I have Lewis and Booger with us here as well, I guess I would ask that. I mean, Lewis, you played in the defensive secondary. Are there not ways that teams can take advantage of that? I'm just envisioning guys bumping him on the line of scrimmage and creating problems and all that sort of thing. Again, this is not to suggest he isn't going to be a terrific player. But there has to be some disadvantage to the fact that he only weighs 166 pounds.
Yeah, look, obviously, you know, you want bigger, faster, stronger players anytime you can get your hands on them. I mean, that's a given. But look, I will say this. Look, the game of the late 80s, early 90s, in the early 2000s, let's just say the 90s and 2000s, is not the game that we see today. And when people start talking about wide receivers who are slightly built like Devontae Smith, and they start going, well, he's not going to be able to get off the jam in the NFL because at the NFL level, we jam differently than in college, then you haven't been watching a whole lot of NFL tape. There's only a few teams that jam at the line of scrimmage and actually try to disrupt wide receivers and beat them up at the line. The rest of the teams, it's more or less like a swinging gate type of philosophy. They just get up there at the line of scrimmage and try to look pretty. And then as soon as the ball is snapped, they're letting wide receivers get free access. And there's a reason why wide receivers are ripping secondaries to shreds and quarterbacks are throwing for 4,000 yards like it's this easy, like they can do it with their eyes closed. And then furthermore, the league is different between the numbers than it was 15, 20 years ago. Guys aren't taking big shots the same way that they were back then. Look, back in our day, look, there were quite honestly, there were some headhunters. There were some people who right now would have been licking their chops at Devontae Smith if he were playing in the league now. It's not like that anymore. And I know a lot of teams, you know, teach guys to go low because they're trying to legislate headshots out of the game. Look, whether you're 220 pounds, you're 166 pounds, you take some of these shots on your knees, you're going to be done regardless. So as far as I'm concerned, there's no concern as far as his weight is concerned and as far as his build. He's a fantastic player. He's going to have a fantastic career.
Here's the thing, though, Boog. I mean, I'm looking at a guy who just had one of the greatest and most productive seasons in college football history, 23 touchdowns, won the Heisman, broke every SEC receiving record that there is, most of them held by Jamar Chase from the year before. And yet, he's not going to go ahead of Chase. He may not go ahead of his teammate Jalen Waddle. And this, arguably, is the reason why, yes?
Well, Greeny, it just depends on how some of these guys have Smith and Chase and Waddle rated. I think when you look at Chase, yeah, he's a little bit of a bigger player, but there's a question mark on him. He hasn't played in a year, but a year ago, he was the best receiver in college football. Jalen Waddle brings just a little bit more explosiveness. That first step, his ability to go from zero to 100 in two steps is absolutely amazing. So I think we all agree. All three of these receivers are gonna go in the top three. Here's the thing I'll say, Greeny. Size is not a skill. Okay, it's just a feature. And if you go back and you watch this young man play in the SEC, better yet, just go back and watch him in practice against Patrick Surtain, a 6'2 cornerback. I haven't heard anything about Devontae Smith not being able to get off the line in practice. So I think it's way overblown looking at him, 6'1", 166. As you get a little bit older, as we all can attest, you're going to gain a few more pounds. You'll get a little bit heavier. I think he will be fine when it comes to his weight, Greeny.
Kimberly, again, you sat down with him. He spoke about this when he won the Heisman, about being doubted because of his size for so long. What kinds of things did he say?
Greeny, listen, the first thing he said to me was, turn on the tape. Tell these teams, turn on the tape. What do you see? You see a guy who clearly is not going to back down on any play. And I said, you know, your weight is a big topic of conversation your whole life. And he's like, are we talking football? Are we talking bodybuilding? Do you want a bodybuilder? Okay, fine. But if you're looking for a football player, I'm that dude. And you love a guy that is his size, that seeks out contact, and is as confident and skilled as he is.
Look, there are a lot of small receivers in this draft. One of them, Tutu Atwell, may weigh closer to 150 pounds. Let's see how that impacts where these guys go. Stay tight. We have much more on the draft as we continue, but let me run the floor through the action in the NBA last night. Steph Curry had been the hottest player in the sport. I say had because last night he went cold. His 11-game streak of scoring at least 30 comes to an end. He was 7 of 25 from the floor, made just two threes last night, and Golden State lost to the Wizards by four. Steph finished with 18 points. The hottest team in the league is the Knicks. Break up the Knicks. They won their eighth straight, beating Atlanta in overtime by 10. Julius Randle scored 40. The Knicks now on the fourth seed in the East. Meanwhile, Trae Young rolled an ankle in the third quarter. X-rays were negative, so that's the good news. Speaking of injury news, Lakers star Anthony Davis says he will make his return from a 9-week absence tonight against the Mavericks, so long as his right leg responds well to practice. The Lakers have been 14-16 since he went out in mid-February. They currently sit number 5 in the Western Conference. And if you're looking for NBA action this weekend, we tip it off with a Friday doubleheader on ESPN. Celtics take on Kyrie and the Nets at 7:30 Eastern, and then you will see Steph and the Warriors taking on Jokic and the Nuggets. That's Friday night right here on ESPN. The day after Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was found guilty in the murder of George Floyd, the conviction was a big part of the conversation in locker rooms across the world of sports, and that includes in Philadelphia, where Sixers head coach Doc Rivers says he spoke to his team about the verdict.
The fact that we are celebrating or celebrated a man who committed murder, that he was going to jail, you know, I thought about that last night, and I'm not so sure if we've come a long way or if we have a long way to go.
Instead of people being excited about it, I think more people feel like it's about damn time type of situation. But it's a move in the right direction. We know we have a lot more to go.
You know, I think the biggest thing that we all saw that is accountability. And I think the toughest part for us all is that, you know, there was still a life lost. You know, everybody thinks, you know, because of the verdict, everything is right in the world, but it's not. It's not. There's still a lot of things going on that are unjust. You know, and I send my prayers and wishes out to Makaiya Bryant and her family. You know, you think you're getting through one thing and then another thing occurs.
So you heard Chris Paul there referencing Makaiya Bryant. She was a 16-year-old who was shot and killed by a Columbus police officer Tuesday after lunging at two people while holding a knife. The officer could be heard on videotape shouting several times to get down before firing four shots. LeBron James posted and then subsequently deleted a tweet yesterday showing a photo of the officer who shot Bryant with an accompanying caption, "Your next hashtag accountability," along with an hourglass emoji. LeBron then later tweeted this. He wrote, "Anger does any of us any good, and that includes myself. Gathering all the facts and educating does, though. My anger still is here for what happened to that little girl. My sympathy for her family, and may justice prevail. He added, I'm so damn tired of seeing black people killed by police. I took the tweet down because it's being used to create more hate. This isn't about one officer. It's about the entire system, and they always use our words to create more racism. I am so desperate for accountability. On Tuesday, James responded to the Chauvin verdict on Twitter with a single word, just tweeting accountability. Meanwhile, Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre says he did not think that Chauvin meant to kill George Floyd. On his podcast, Favre said, quote, I find it hard to believe, and I'm not defending Derek Chauvin in any way, I find it hard to believe, first of all, that he intentionally meant to kill George Floyd. That being said, his actions were uncalled for. I don't care what color the person is on the street. I don't know what led to that video that we saw where his knee is on his neck, but the man had thrown in the towel. Favre said last week that he wanted politics out of sports because he believed it was hurting games and agreed with people deciding not to watch sports anymore. We'll take a timeout here, and we will continue with more on Get Up. Coming up, what's going on in Philly? Why didn't the Eagles name that man their starting quarterback? We'll answer that question next.